Afternoon Theatre.
The Hubris File by Rod Beecham. With Geoffrey Collins as David Pargeter.
McLeod, yes?
Morning, Mark.
Oh, Simon. I was just about to call you. I presume this is your doing.
This what?
And don't be coy, Simon. This brown leather-covered notebook sitting on my desk.
It's David Pargeter's diary.
And how do we come to be in possession of the personal diary of a junior minister of the Crown?
It arrived by the second post yesterday. Addressed to me, personally. No note or anything, just the diary. I took it home with me. It makes fascinating bedside reading. I'd like to hear your views on it.
What exactly is wrong, Simon?
Well, naturally enough, I tried to get in touch with Pargeter. Only no one seems to know where he is. And on closer investigation, it turns out that nobody's known where he is for a little over 36 hours.
I see. And of course, nobody thought of letting us in on it.
It seems they didn't want to make a fuss prematurely.
Dear God.
Quite. Well, you were right and I was wrong. I apologize in advance to save you from the sin of spiritual pride.
What are you talking about?
You did say he'd bear watching.
But then I think everybody bears watching.
I know you do, you dour Calvinist bastard. That's what makes it particularly irritating when you're right. How long do you think it'll take you to read the diary?
Well, that depends on whether you want me to stick to the facts or wade through the waffle as well. I presume there's plenty of waffle, him being a minister and everything.
The answer's both, I'm afraid, Mac. The facts, for a reason which will become increasingly clear as you read on, and the waffle, because it's our only way of discovering what the wretched man has actually done.
Now, look, I'm just a legman, Simon. You're supposed to be the intellectual.
I know, but occasionally we intellectuals relish the opinions of you bluff, no-nonsense, down-to-earth working men.
Get stuffed. All right, give me an hour, okay?
As soon as you can, Mac. I'll be here all morning. Oh, it might be an idea if you put it on tape, for safety's sake.
We'll come to that. It might have been a good idea if you... All right, then. Diary of David Pargeter. I have just realized that the only really successful formula for dealing with the key moments in your life
is not to recognize them as key moments. I would like to flatter myself that I remained calm and authoritative in spite of the nervous tension boiling away just below the surface. But the fact is that I didn't see the slightest reason for either tension or nerves. I was a little surprised that Oliver wasn't there himself to deal with a potentially tricky situation, but it wasn't the first time I've had to deal with an awkward question in the house.
The member for Stetterfield West. Would the honourable member care to comment on what is to many of us the appalling and shameful fact that our Majesty's government has chosen to re-establish diplomatic relations with the leader of an African state who has not only seized control in an illegal and bloodthirsty military operation, overthrowing his country's democratically elected government in the process, but who, for 2 cents coming to power, sent you records of vicious murders and executions of people over whom he rode? Mr. Pargeter!
Can I, first of all, express to the House the Foreign Secretary's regret that he cannot be here to deal with this matter personally. However, I shall do my best to deal with the Honourable Member's obviously very sincere and deeply felt concern. Now, those of you who know my record will know that there is no more ardent defender of the democratic principle inside this House or out of it. So you can imagine that when I was asked to give my support to the Cabinet decision to reopen diplomatic relations with what is, I freely admit, in our terms, an undemocratic and oppressive society, I did not give that support without a great deal of painful soul-searching. But I did give it. No, I am not ashamed of it, and I'll tell you why. You cannot make evil go away simply by pretending it does not exist. The only hope of getting President Mbatha and others like him to exercise moderation and humanity and to bring them closer to the recognition of the basic human rights we have long enjoyed in this country is by the use of persuasion and influence. And you cannot use persuasion and influence unless you have access. And you cannot have access except by the normal channels of trade and diplomacy. There is, Mr. Speaker, another equally powerful reason for supporting this decision. Though all tyrannies are equally appalling to the people who live under them, all tyrannies do not represent the same threat to the freedom of other nations. President Mbatha presents no threat whatsoever to Western democracy. But, as everyone here knows, there is at work in Africa, growing stronger by the minute, a power that presents a very real threat, a very real threat indeed, to everything that this country stands for. Yes, all right, you can groan. There are people groaning now in Poland and Afghanistan. And they don't think it's a fool funny. Now, Mr. Speaker, if we turn our backs on President Mbatha, now all we'll be doing, one way or another, is handing over one more part of that deeply troubled continent to the Russians. And with them, as we've learnt only too well from bitter experience, our opportunities to exercise influence and persuasion are virtually nil.
Minister, congratulations.
Thank you, Ralph. What for exactly?
Oh, come on, Minister. They say poor Brayley didn't know where to put himself.
Well, after all, any credit goes to you and Tony. You put it together. I just deliver the lines.
I understand there was a certain amount of masterly improvisation.
Tell me, every time someone sneezes in the house, does half Whitehall say bless you?
No.
Well, I suppose I did get a little carried away.
I'm not sure, Minister, but I think there's a note on your desk from the Foreign Secretary.
Oliver, he's in Brussels.
Apparently not. Apparently he caught an earlier flight than we expected.
Then why didn't he... He's left a note for me, you say?
I think so, yes.
Oh. Well, I suppose I'd better pop along and read it.
It was a calculated risk, David. Well, not a risk, of course. But the PM thought, play it down. And I must say, it seemed like a fairly good idea.
You really think it could have turned out nasty then, Oliver?
Oh, yes, yes. If Brayley had kept on shouting and the press had decided to play it up big, it wouldn't have done our standing one little bit of good. That's why I decided to keep well out of it.
You mean on the grounds that if it was only worth sending a junior minister to deal with, the press were hardly likely to take much notice of it?
Oh, don't look so pained, David. If you'd made a balls of it, we'd still have been knee-deep in the mire. But you didn't make a balls up. Quite the reverse, in fact.
Thank you.
After all, if we do have to have dealings with this bloody little man, the less public notice is taken of it, the better, don't you think?
Oh, quite.
Quite. And so, I need hardly add, to our friends across the pond.
Yes. Speaking of that, do you know what else Brayley's been saying? Off the floor, of course. He's trying to get supporters for a theory that the CIA were behind Mbatha.
No, talk about race under the bed. Brayley's mob think the Women's Institute is the front of the CIA. To be quite candid, David, I did have some ulterior motives for putting you in the firing line today.
What, some sort of a test, you mean?
Oh, not of your ability, dear boy. No one has any doubts about your ability. More a question of attitude.
Attitude?
Don't be disingenuous, David. You know perfectly well that as little as 3 years ago, you'd have been standing where Brayley stood, making every bit as much of a fuss. I just wanted to be certain that a little bit of genuine responsibility had helped you adapt yourself to the harsh world of real-life politics.
I haven't altered my basic beliefs, Oliver.
Of course you haven't altered your basic beliefs. We've none of us altered our basic beliefs. We all still want the same things we always wanted. It's just that we've had to learn there's a world of difference between spouting ideals and putting them into practice.
Yes, well, I think I understand that, Oliver.
Good. Well, I'm pleased. The PM's pleased. What more do you want?
Did the PM actually...
Yes, David, the Prime Minister actually said that. And yes, David, there are rumours of a reshuffle in the not-too-distant future. And no, David, I'm not making any promises, because, one thing, I'm not in any position to make them. But you certainly haven't done yourself any harm at all.
Women are really extraordinary. I hate writing this down because I've been a convinced feminist all my life. But you can't get away from the fact that there are times when they behave in exactly the opposite way to what you'd expect. Almost willfully. Even an intelligent, rational, strong-willed woman like Marianne. Deep down inside, none of them seem to know what they really want.
I'd have thought education, wouldn't you, Mary?
Hmm?
Wouldn't you think education? I mean, for one thing, there's not much else I'm really suited for. And for another, if there is going to be a reshuffle, old Charlie must be number one candidate for the chop. Don't you think so?
Yes. I should think it's very likely.
Of course, I want to get back to the Foreign Office as soon as possible. That's where the real power is. Still, one step at a time, hey? Mary?
Hmm?
Mary, what's the matter?
Nothing.
You don't... I don't know, you don't seem to have taken this in. Hurry. 3 months from now, the odds are I'm going to have a ministry. Darling, we've done it.
Have we?
I told you what the PM said.
Yes, you told me what the PM said. You told me what Oliver said. You told me what Ralph said. I've heard nothing all evening except how everyone's been telling you what a clever little boy you are.
What? I don't... Mary, what's the matter with you?
I read your speech. Oh. It came in just before I left the office.
Yes? So what did you think?
What did I think?
Yes, what did...
I think that a few years ago, if you'd sat down and read that smug concoction of evasions and platitudes, it would have made you feel as sick as it made me.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
David, how could you? How could you? That man represents everything that you allegedly went into politics to oppose. And you not only didn't apologize for being part of a government that's falling all over itself to kiss his fat backside, you actually made it sound as though it was something to be proud of.
I simply explained the position the way I genuinely saw it.
David, have you forgotten standing up and asking Harris how he could possibly support the line the Americans were taking? Do you remember how he answered you? In almost exactly the same words as you answered Brady today.
I really can't see that you can draw parallels between Kamaranga and Vietnam. For one thing...
Oh, don't try and play games with words, David. The man's evil, for God's sake.
Well, nobody's disputing that.
No. Nobody's disputing it. Nobody seems very bothered about it, either.
What do you want us to do? Send the troops in?
Why not?
Oh, the Russians would love that, wouldn't they? They'd have a field day.
I shouldn't think the Russians would care. I thought the whole point of rubbing noses with this vicious little psychopath was that he was an anti-communist vicious little psychopath.
We have to maintain a position of respecting territorial integrity.
Territorial what?
Oh, you're not being fair, Marie.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're not. You're not being fair. I mean, when I've really got some real power, I can do something about the bastards like Imbata, but I can't do anything if I haven't got the power. Now, can I?
I suppose not. Sorry.
That's all right. Well, where would you like to go?
Go?
To eat, to celebrate.
Oh, David, not tonight.
But we always are...
Yes, I know, but not tonight, David. I really don't feel up to it.
Okay. Suit yourself.
Another night. Tomorrow, maybe.
Well, it's up to you. I don't want to make you do anything you don't want to do.
All right. Come on. Let's go.
No. Not if you don't want
David,
to.
David, I said I'll go, all right? Let's go.
I must say it took the edge off it a bit. Mary and I have always celebrated our little triumphs like this.
In her career or mine. Just a quiet dinner, the two of us, marking off another page successfully turned. And afterwards, she was very quiet during dinner. Usually she bubbles gently and smiles a lot. But I think she was thawing a bit towards the end. I kept telling her it's very easy to see things as black and white from the ivory tower of journalism, but out in the real world, if you want to put your noble ideas into practice, you have to make a few short-term compromises in order to achieve your long-term aims. I think she agreed with me in the end. This time tomorrow she'll be all smiles again. July the 18th. Rory. For God's sake, I mean, she despises Rory. She's always... Whenever we've talked about him, ever since university... Is it a joke? Is that what it is? Some sort of mad joke? When he rang me today at work and said it was so important we meet for lunch, I thought... I imagined maybe he wants me as a front man for one of his friendly documentaries.
Well, that can't do me any harm either, I thought.
David, over here.
Ah! Hello, how are you?
Fine. Do you want a drink?
Oh, yes, all right, I'll have a scotch.
Waiter? Two large scotches, please.
Rory, you don't look your normal, ultra-relaxed self. Anything wrong?
Hmm?
I mean, you and your camera crew haven't suddenly become personae non grata with some hypersensitive foreign power, and you want me to pull a few strings, huh?
Well, let's wait till the drinks get here, shall we?
Yes, all right, if you like.
Oh, hell, I can't wait. Listen, David, it's about Mary.
Mary?
She's moved in with me, David. For the time being, at any rate. And until she makes up her mind what she wants to do, she's staying at my place.
Look, what's the point of this, Rory? Mary's at home. I left her there 3 hours ago. She never...
Well, she's going to talk to you, David. Or write to you, I don't know. I think she felt if she didn't get out now, she'd never make the break.
Mary would never do anything like that. Not without talking to me about it first.
She tried to talk to you about it. Thousands of times. That's what she says, anyway.
About leaving me? Never.
Not in so many words. But about your relationship?
Our relationship is fine. Our relationship is perfect. Look, I'm sorry, Rory. I don't know what Marianne's been saying to you, but I can assure you she's never said or done the slightest thing to make me think there was anything serious. If it's that bloody silly argument about him, Barter...
David...
I want to talk to her. Where is she?
She doesn't want to talk to you, David, not at the moment. That's why I'm supposed to be the one to tell you about it, so that you'll accept it as a fait accompli, so that when you meet...
Well, I don't accept it as a bloody fait accompli. It's crazy.
Your drink, sir?
Thank you.
Soda, sir?
Oh, no, thank you.
Yes, please.
Sir.
It's absolutely crazy. Mary has never once talked to me about anything like this.
Well, she tried. Maybe you just haven't listened.
Rubbish.
How long has it been since you made love?
What? I assume that's what they refer to as a rhetorical question.
Oh, for Christ's sake, David.
I'm sorry, Rory. Have I offended you in some way?
You don't think Marianne's actually...
I have no idea, Rory. I've no idea what my wife talks to you about. Actually, until 5 minutes ago, I've no idea you had any kind of relationship worth speaking about.
We don't have a relationship, not the kind you're talking about. I'm not pretending I wouldn't have it different, or that I don't hope it'll be different in the future. But for the moment, we're just friends.
Good. I shall be at the flat all afternoon, Roy. You can tell Marianne that any time she wants to talk about this face-to-face, like two adult, rational human beings, I'll be waiting for her. All right, Rory?
David.
All right, Rory?
It didn't really hit me until I got home. On the way in the taxi, it was almost as though I was thinking of something else. The flat. I never knew a place could be so empty. It was as though everything knew. The carpets, the furniture, the pictures. I walked from room to room, like a man in a thriller looking for the body. She's only been gone for 4 hours, for God's sake. I rang the office and said I had a migraine. I'm so sick of the silence. Rory. I didn't think. I mean, she hardly even talks about him nowadays. I remember when we first met him at Oxford. We'd only known each other about a month, and we went to this awful party. Rory was leaning up against a door jamb, looking bored and elegant, blocking up the whole doorway, of course, waving a glass of the regulation white wine and holding forth to his court. What was it he said that made us both so furious? All human activity
is futile. Some of it, like war and politics, is futile and dangerous. Some of it, like work and prayer, is futile and harmless. And the rest, like sex and alcohol, is futile and pleasurable. I propose to dedicate my life exclusively to the latter.
You're pathetic, Rory. I don't know whether you mean it or whether it's pose of the week, but either way, you're a prime example of self-fulfilling prophecy. As long as people think the way you do, life will be futile. When they stop, it won't be. It's as
simple as that. God, those were good times. Those were the best times. The 50s turning into the 60s, and we knew in our bones that we could change the world the way the young today know in their bones that they can't. And how we despised Rory. Later on, in my rooms, the things we said about him and his kind, and how they'd have to be swept away once and for all, so we could build the just and equal society that was just around the corner. God, there was nothing we weren't going to do. That was the first time we ever made love. I was inexperienced. She was unbelievably unselfish. July the 19th. I woke feeling refreshed. I couldn't help feeling that after a night's sleep, Mary would be feeling different too.
Mary would be feeling different too. Perhaps even a little silly. Sooner or later, she would be in touch.
Good morning, Minister. I trust you've made a full recovery.
What?
Your migraine. Is it still bothering you?
Oh, no, much better, thank you, Ralph.
Mind you, I'm not surprised in this heat. We had all the windows open last night, just a sheet, and still hardly got a wink of sleep. You're quite sure you're feeling better?
Yes, thank you, Ralph. I'm completely recovered, as I said.
Ah, well done. The wonders of air conditioning and a clear conscience, hmm? And the lovely Marianne, I can't imagine her wilting, even in a desert.
David, we must talk.
Not now, Mari, this is important.
Betty was saying only yesterday, it seems ages since the four of us got together. Not since that delightful evening now, when was it, nearly a year ago?
You know how it is with Marianne's job, it takes her away a lot.
Really? I thought I remembered you saying that she insisted on being based in London. I thought that was what made you such a model couple in troubled times.
Would you mind giving Tony a buzz, Ralph? We've got a lot to get through today.
Hmm? Oh, yes, of course, David, yes. Hot weather always reinforces my natural tendency to procrastination.
Bumf time.
Bumf time, Tony. Quick as you like. Cheeky young sod.
Why don't you tell him, then?
What? Oh, he's all right. I don't really...
Morning, Minister.
Morning, Ralph.
Morning, Tony. What have you got for us this morning?
It's still mostly Kamaranga, Minister. More background stuff, really. But I think we can cobble enough together to keep Brayley happy.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are one or two letters, but nothing I can't handle.
Perhaps David ought to make up his own mind about that.
Perhaps David ought to make up his own mind about making up his own mind.
Oh, sorry, David, I didn't
know. No, I'm sorry. You're right. It is damned hot.
Oh, there was one rather odd thing. The Express telephoned. They wanted to talk to you personally, Minister.
David, we must talk.
What did they want?
I don't think it's political. I think it's for their social page.
Oh, something to do with some charity function I'm scheduled to grace, I suppose.
Yes, that's what I'd imagine.
But they don't need to bother you with that personally, do they?
I've no idea, Ralph, and it really doesn't matter, does it? Let's get down to Kamaranga.
David Pargeter's office. Oh, good morning, Mrs. Pargeter. How are you? Yes, of course. Just one moment. It's your wife, Minister.
Oh, thank you.
David, would you like us to...
Actually, Ralph, there's a couple of points I'd like to go over with you that are hardly worth bothering the Minister with.
Oh, fine.
We'll be in my office, Minister.
Oh, yes, fine. I shan't be very long. Mary?
David, there's something that I'm...
Marianne, what the hell are you playing at?
Well, didn't Rory tell you?
Oh, bugger what Rory told me. Listen, Murray, I must talk to you.
Well, there really isn't any point in talking, David. I've written you a letter.
A letter?
I know it seems a bit cowardly, but it isn't meant to be. It's just the only way I can get my thoughts together properly.
You can't wipe out 14 years with a few lines on a bloody typewriter.
David, look, the reason I'm ringing, God knows how, but I've got a nasty feeling that the press have got hold of something.
Oh, God.
I can't imagine how. I haven't said a word, neither has Rory. Do you know what some of them are like?
Yes. The Express has been trying to reach me.
Damn. I'm sorry, David.
Look, if you want to put out some discreet statement beating them to the punch, I'll go along with whatever you want to say.
That's very sweet of you, Murray, but I'm afraid the only statement I'm liable to give to the press is that there is absolutely no truth in the rumors that David Pargeter's wife is leaving him.
David?
Look, I have to see you. We have to talk. Please.
It's too late, David.
How can it be too late? Please, Murray. Murray?
Look, Rory's away this afternoon. You can come here if you like.
Thank you.
But I warn you, David, I'm not coming back. I do mean...
No, I'll be there in half an hour.
Are you quite sure you can make it?
Oh, yes, I'll have another migraine.
1 minute, everything's fine. Everything's normal. The whole world is marching steadily in the right direction. The next minute, it's too late. How can it be too late?
What was all that about a migraine?
Just something I made up for Ralph and Tony's benefit.
You'll have to tell them sooner or later.
There's nothing to talk about.
David.
Look, Marianne, you've made your point. All right. I presume that's what this is all about. All right, you've made it. Now come home and we'll talk about it. Anything you like for as long as you like. Just come home.
David. This is why I didn't want you to come. Look. I felt guilty about trying to put it all in a letter. I thought I owed you some sort of explanation to your face. But it doesn't change anything. I'm not coming back.
This is ridiculous. All this because of some silly disagreement
about...
Oh,
don't try and pretend this has anything to do with last night, David. You know as well as I do we've been getting more and more out of touch for years. Last night simply proved how far apart we've really grown.
I just don't understand this. I can't make sense of it. You're saying that we have been growing further and further apart, but I've never felt that. I've never felt that for a moment.
Then you're lucky, David. Actually, all I think it means is that it's years since you took a proper look at us. I did try to tell you.
You never...
David, there have been times when I begged you to talk to me.
Yes,
begged you, David.
But I had
it was always wait. Wait till I get elected. Wait till I make my mark. Wait till I get into the cabinet.
I was doing it for us. We were doing it together.
Oh.
Please, come home, Murray.
It's too late, David.
You want to talk? All right, we'll talk.
I don't want to talk anymore. I don't know. There comes a point when you just give up trying. Don't ask me when, because I couldn't tell you when. I just know that one day it suddenly didn't seem worth the effort. That was when I realized I didn't love you anymore.
Don't say that.
I'm sorry.
Please don't say that. You can't just stop loving somebody.
I know. It takes an enormous amount of indifference and loneliness and rejection.
What's it all been for, then? It was for you. I swear it.
I'm sorry, David. I really am sorry.
Murray, we used to laugh at Rory. We used to laugh at him.
Hello?
Shh, Mac, how are you getting on?
Oh, for God's sake, Simon, you said an hour.
Hasn't it been an hour?
Not even half, as you very well know.
What do you think of it so far?
Masterly exercise and self-pity, I should say.
Callous sod.
Well, these things happen, for God's sake.
Have you got to the bit where we make our entrance yet?
I'm just about to. Now, away with you and leave me in peace. Something rather odd happened today. At 11, Ralph came into the office.
Ah, David. How are you bearing up?
I haven't cracked up since 10 o'clock this morning, if that's what you think.
No, no. Only I didn't want to say anything with Tony here. You know these thrusting young men. They regard any hint of decent feelings as a sign of weakness. Betty and I are both terribly sorry.
Thank you, Ralph.
Betty said I was to tell you you're welcome to come round and see us any time. Any time.
That's very kind of her.
You ought to do that, you know. Come round, crack a bottle, let it all out. You need friends at a time like this.
Yes.
Why not make it tonight?
No, I can't make it tonight, Ralph, but thanks very much all the same. Was there anything else?
Hmm? Oh, yes. There are two...
Men from security. One tall and elegant, in a scruffy sort of way. The other a squat, dour Celt with a drooping moustache. Their names were...
Nash. Simon Nash. And this is my colleague, Ewan McLeod.
How do you do?
Mac to his friend.
Well, sit down, gentlemen. What's the trouble?
Trouble? There's no trouble, Mr. Pargeter. Well, no more than usual.
No, I'm sorry.
No trouble, Mr. Pargeter. From time to time, we like to liaise with people in key positions, sound out their views on general security, see if they can suggest any improvement in procedures.
No, it's never happened before.
Well, we're rather stretched for staff these days.
Isn't everybody?
Well, Mr. Pargeter.
No, I'm sorry.
Is there anything you can think of?
Any weak areas? Any gaps that need stopping up? Any weak links that need tightening?
No, I don't think so. I'm afraid round here we tend to look on security as a bit of a bloody nuisance. No offence. What I mean is, if the procedures weren't so rigid and we weren't all observing them scrupulously, we'd hardly think that, would we?
Well, you mean it's all a bit of a waste of time, really?
No, Mr. McLeod, I don't mean anything of the kind. I am perfectly well aware of the need for security.
Oh, it's just that you've spoken up many times for the need for more open government.
In terms of policy, yes. That doesn't mean I think we should leave sensitive documents lying around in the canteen.
Quite. You're sure there's nothing you've overlooked? Forgive me, but it's common knowledge that you must be under a degree of emotional strain at the moment.
You mean because my wife has left me? Am I likely to forget to lock the safe when I go home?
We're all human, Mr. Pargeter.
Yes. Well, I've always managed to keep my personal problems out of my working life.
Of course, quite right. It's the only way.
It's the things that surprise you that hurt the most. Everything you might expect to bring you pain, photographs, things you bought together, you're on your guard against those. You find a way of pushing them out of your mind. But this evening I was looking for a pencil that had rolled down the side of an armchair, and I found one of her earrings. A pearl one that we spent a whole day searching for a year or so ago. I held it in my hand for an hour, staring at it, building a picture of her around it. The ear, pale, vulnerable. And under the hair, the heart-shaped face, the brown eyes, the generous mouth, the strong nose. She was always so absurdly, touchingly sensitive about her nose. Then the body. I was looking at what I'd written about my picture of the two of us. Is that what you do? Get your own picture of a relationship so firmly stuck in your mind that you actually stop looking at it? As if you took a wedding photo and tucked it away at the back of a drawer. And if, while you were out, someone were to sneak into the house and subtly and skillfully alter a detail here, an expression there, would you ever really notice? Wouldn't a time come when, without knowing it, you were looking at a totally different picture? I was so sure.
I was so sure. I was so sure. And so it makes me wonder, has my whole life been like that?
All right, for Christ's sake. All right. Good job. Hello, mates. Good evening, comrade. All right. Come on in. Where's Rachel?
Oh, in Israel. She's been there for 6 months now.
That permanent?
I don't know. It's a bad time for left-wing Jews. Hard for them to know where they stand.
It's hard for any of us.
Is it? There you go. Oh. If your palate doesn't rise up and wring its hands in polite disbelief.
Thank you.
Do you want me to say something about Marianne? I don't know what you want me to say.
Nothing, if you don't want to. I didn't think you read the Capitalist Press.
Sure.
Rory, for God's sake.
Well, that surprises you, does it?
Well, doesn't it you? You know Rory.
Yeah. I suppose she thought that having found herself saddled with a Maine Chancer, she might as well find someone who'd never made any bones about being one in the first place.
Oh, yes, I might have guessed you'd have that in common with her. For all you ideological purists, anyone who actually goes out into the marketplace and gets his hands dirty is a Maine Chancer.
Not everybody.
Now listen, Luther. It's bloody easy keeping your ideals spotless, addressing rallies of the faithful and running tin-pot little underground newspapers. You try having to make decisions that affect the lives of millions of people. That's when your beliefs get really tested.
Do you know what I think, David? I don't think you ever had any beliefs. Marianne was the one with the beliefs.
Now, just...
Oh, I'm not saying that all things considered, you didn't think they were the best ideas going. They just weren't part of you the way they were for the rest of us. What are you doing here, David?
What do you mean?
What are you doing here? What is it you want? I don't wish you any harm, but there are a hell of a lot of people a damn sight worse off than you are.
I suppose I wanted to... Well, I had this picture, you see, of me and Marianne, and I seem to have got all that wrong. And I had this picture of myself, what I've done, what I've achieved, and... I suppose I wondered if I got that all wrong, too.
Well, I've got to hand it to you for subtlety, David. Most people in your position would run round to some fellow greaser, some colleague in the same position of comfortable hypocrisy, and spend all night patting each other on the back and reassuring each other what bloody good chaps they were, really. Yeah. The way you look at it, if I can convince even old Luther... But when the chips are down, I haven't done such a bad job, really. Then really everything must be all right. Is that it?
The chips are down, Luther.
Why haven't you been to see me for over 2 years, David?
I've been busy, for God's sake.
Really? You sure somebody didn't just breathe in your ear that it might be bad for you to be seen socializing with a known communist agitator?
Yes, somebody did try that once. I told them to get stuck.
Of course you did. That fixed your conscience perfectly, and then for the next 2.5 years you found yourself conveniently too busy to pick up the telephone.
You really think I've sold out, don't you?
As it happens, I don't, David. I don't think you've sold out. I don't think you've ever had anything to sell.
Oh, now, come on, Luther.
You should ask me, comrade. I think that your life's gone exactly the way you wanted, right up to this moment.
Now, you know
I'm
that...
not saying you weren't quite genuinely prepared to serve the downtrodden masses as long as you were serving yourself in the process. But the first time it came to a choice between your so-called ideals and your career, it was no contest.
You really believe in laying it on the line, don't you?
The only thing that surprises me is that it's taken Marianne this long to see through you. But then, like 99% of the human race, I expect she has a facility for seeing what she wants to see.
You bastard!
You don't have to listen, comrade. There's no lock on the door.
I don't really want to go home just yet.
Oh, it's okay. Stay as long as you like. Drink as much as you like. There's plenty more where that came from.
I want to see Mary.
She's asleep. Both were, actually.
I don't believe you.
Come inside, will you? To tell you the truth, David, I've no idea whether she's awake or asleep. What I'm quite certain of is that she doesn't want to see you, especially in this state. Are you really as pissed as you appear to be? Look, David, you're not just being a cliché, you're being a bloody embarrassing cliché, and really, I don't know how to handle it.
Oh, forgive me, Rory. The last thing a chap wants to do is to cause any embarrassment to the man who's walked off with his wife.
David, Marianne left you, then she came to me, and they're two totally unrelated incidents, and I'm sorry, you'll really have to accept that. Look, this isn't you, In the morning... Look, why don't you give Marianne a ring in the morning?
Too late in the morning.
I've just been to see Luther.
Kremlin kid. Who the hell did he want with him?
He said... Never mind. I'll tell Mary.
Tell her what?
Could you get her for me, please?
All right. I'll see if she'll talk to you. David, can I just make one thing clear? As far as I'm concerned, fancying yourself as the aggrieved husband doesn't give you any special rights. And if you make a habit of turning up here, pissed and yelling at 2 o'clock in the morning, I shall phone the fuzz and get them to cart you off like I would any other drunk, okay?
I just want...
David?
Mary?
I'll leave you two together.
Oh, David. Hadn't you better sit down or something?
I'm not that tight. I've just been to see Luther.
Luther?
Rachel's gone. Did you know that?
Oh, yes, he told me. It might only be temporary.
He told you? When did he tell you?
Well, I don't know. A couple of months back.
I didn't know you kept in touch with him.
No. I'm sorry, David. I just didn't want to have a row with you about it. Most of all, I didn't want to have to sit through the depressing spectacle of you trying to find some honorable reason for trying to stop me seeing him, instead of admitting you were frightened of the effect it would have on your career if your wife were seen hobnobbing with a party member.
Luther said... Luther said I never sold out because I didn't have anything to sell in the first place.
That was a bit hard. That was very hard.
But true. You don't have to answer. You're right. I've got it all wrong somehow. But I really don't know how. That's the point. I really thought I was doing well, doing the right things. The right thing for us. The right thing for the country. If anybody had asked me the day I was making that speech in the House what I thought of my life, I'd have said it was the best any man could have. Talk about hubris.
David.
And then, suddenly, you're gone, and overnight half my life doesn't have any point, and because of that, and because of the things you say, I look at my work, my achievements, my whole life has become pointless. And I still can't see how it can have happened just like that. From one day to the next.
David.
But I can change, Mary. I've learned from what's happened. I do see where I went wrong. It won't be easy, but I think I can really get it right now.
I hope so, David.
I'll chuck in the whole job if that's what you want. Oh, I'll try and do it honestly, properly. And we'll talk. We'll talk all the time. The way we
David,
used...
David, please.
Don't say it's too late, Mary. Please. Don't. I won't listen.
David. David, it's not your fault. I'm not blaming you for being what you are. I'm the one who's to blame, really. I thought you were one thing and you turned out to be another.
But I can be that person again.
David, you can't go back to being something you never were.
Hubris, from the Greek. A state of mind of taking one's good fortune for granted, to the extent of believing that one deserves it as a result of one's own virtues and achievements. A state of mind invariably punished by the gods. All human activity is futile.
Excuse me, Minister, are you busy?
No. Come in, Tony.
Only I don't think you've met Jean yet, have you? Jean Williams takes over from Mrs. Merrill this morning.
Oh, yes. Hello, Jean.
How do you do, Minister?
I'm sorry, I really haven't woken up yet. Welcome to the department.
Thank you.
Finding your way around all right?
Tony's showing me the ropes.
Good. Well, you're in reasonably safe hands then. I'll see you later, perhaps.
I hope so.
I'll be with you in about 10 minutes, Minister, if that's all right.
No hurry, Tony.
Very like Mary. Hair not so dark, features a little softer, but very much the same type. Instant fantasies of being 20 again.
Starting all over again and getting it right. An instant biological response, a comfort dressed up as a life plan.
Hello. What are you doing here at this hour?
Oh, hello. I thought I'd stay late tonight, so I could get down to work tomorrow without having to stop every 5 minutes to ask where something is.
I'm very impressed.
It's not meant to impress. It's just the way I like to do things.
Yes, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Oh, no, no, neither did I.
Can I give you a lift somewhere?
Oh, could you? Only I live in Holland Park. Isn't that out of your way?
Not at all.
Well, that would be lovely. Only the thing is, I did really want to finish off this folder.
That's all right. I don't mind waiting.
Do you always work late?
Not always, no. It's a habit I seem to have got into recently.
Yes, I see.
Since everybody in England who can read knows all about it, there's very little point in pretending you don't.
I wasn't. I just didn't know how you feel about talking about it.
Presumably I should know all about you. If I had read your file, what would it have told me?
Nothing much. Born and brought up in Wales, Cardiff University, straight into the service, where I neither distinguished myself to any great extent or blotted my copybook enough to stop the slow, steady climb upwards. Divorced. It was a big mistake. We were only together for a year.
Now, we were together for 14.
Yes. Oh, that's my flat, the one on the end there.
Right.
Would it give the wrong impression if I were to ask the boss in for a drink?
Well, that all depends on what impression you're trying to give. Standard response one of deserted husband. Get drunk and turn up on wife's doorstep in early hours of morning. Standard response two. Seek comfort in arms of another woman. Well, in her company, anyway. It's wrong to say that people don't know what they're doing. We always know what we're doing and why we're doing it. The self-deception lies in thinking that the knowledge gives us any kind of control. So why shouldn't I be a cliché if that's what I want? Why shouldn't I sit and drink scotch with an attractive woman and see what happens?
Did you love your wife very much?
I love my wife very much. Though this separation wasn't any idea of mine, I can still hardly believe it.
I'm sorry. Would you rather talk about something else?
Oh, no. No, I can't think of anything else I want to talk about.
I wish somebody would talk about me like that if I left them.
Trouble is, when you've had somebody like that and lost them, there isn't any point in trying to replace them. Do you mind if I have another?
Please, help yourself.
In fact, there doesn't seem to be much point in anything.
What about your work?
My work? At the moment, I'm afraid the only way I can think of my work is as the chief thing responsible for driving me and Mary apart. Can I pour you one of these?
No, thanks. I am fine.
No, I'm afraid my attitude to my work at the moment swings back and forth between apathy and the most intense hatred.
Somebody has to do the job.
Oh, do they? Why?
Oh, come
on. No, I'm serious. Why does somebody have to do the job? Why does anybody have to do anything? I used to think that it'll be all the same in 100 years was a supermarket platitude. Like it takes all sorts to make a world. It's perfectly true. 100 years from now, what difference will it make what any of us said or did or thought?
Presumably it could make a great deal of difference to whoever's around at the time.
And 100 years after that, what will they matter?
You really are feeling sorry for yourself.
No, it's not a question of... Yes, I'm sorry. This must be all go about it. And if you were cheerful and optimistic, you'd remind me of Marie. And if you weren't, you'd remind me of me. You could always seduce me, of course. Sorry.
Is that what you were expecting?
No. No, of course not. What the hell? Yes, probably.
Why?
Why not? I'm sorry. I suppose I've just stopped believing in altruistic actions. I'd better go.
You don't have to.
No, I don't have to. I don't have to stay either. I don't have to do anything.
So why do you think I might want to seduce you?
I don't know. You might feel sorry for me. You might want to advance your career. Or it might just be that at times like this, men and women usually end up in bed together and neither of us quite knows how to stop the machinery.
Which reason would you prefer?
Oh, I'll pick the reason most soothing to my ego. And so will you. Futile and pleasurable. Well, it was both, certainly.
Up to a point. Afterwards, for a second, lying beside her, the same ridiculous surge of hope. The new life, the new woman, the new dream. For a moment, I almost consciously, deliberately gave myself up to it. Self-deceit, like a warm, scented bath, begging you to slide in and immerse yourself.
You're very quiet.
I was just thinking.
About your wife?
No, not particularly. I think I'd better be...
You can stay if you like.
No, I think I'd better. I can't really sleep except in my own bed.
All right. I really enjoyed that quite a lot. I take it you didn't.
No, not at all. It was very nice. No, I mean it. You're a very attractive woman. Very good in bed.
Only?
Only nothing. Except that it doesn't change anything.
Were you expecting it to?
No.
Then at least you're not disappointed.
The most extraordinary thing has happened. I got home yesterday evening after a particularly trying day at work. Jean and I had greeted each other with distant politeness, which Tony's antennae picked up immediately. Whether or not he said anything to Ralph, or whether he just passed it on by some sort of telepathy, I don't know, but the pair of them spent the day trying to give me conspiratorial male grins. About a quarter of an hour after I got home, the phone rang. I'm going to call the character who rang Janus, and I'm not going to give away the sex. Because it suddenly occurs to me that somebody else might get hold of this book. And, of course, I can't prove a word of what I'm about to write down. However, for the sake of this diary, I shall call Janus he. Janus, who has already appeared in this diary under his real name, works for the Russians. He hasn't said so, not in so many words, but neither has he bothered to deny it. Not that there was any suggestion of this on the phone, of course. All he did was ask me to lunch the next day, which was a bit of a surprise in itself. The food was excellent, the wine first rate. And Janus displayed a side of his nature that I would never have suspected. He seemed to know me better than I knew myself. Within an hour, I was talking to him more frankly than I've ever talked to anyone in my life, except perhaps Mary in the old days. I found myself pouring out all my ridiculous notions of beginning again, wiping the slate clean. Only to him they didn't appear ridiculous. To my surprise, Janus seemed to recognize me for what I still fondly believe I really am. A genuine idealist who did set out to make the world a better place for ordinary men and women to live in. And on the way just got a little... confused was the word he used. Another word he used was... betrayed. Then he suddenly threw a direct question at me. Did I, or did I not, believe that if I'd behaved differently over Kamaranga, Marianne would still be with me? Put bluntly like that, it was a bit hard to answer straight away. I fluffed and mumbled a bit about there being always more than one reason when a relationship falls apart. But in the end, I had to admit he was probably right. Then he said... What would you say if I told you that the CIA were behind the coup in Kamaranga and that Her Majesty's government knew all about it at least a week before it happened? Of course, I said I'd say that he was talking rubbish, but at the same moment, I felt my blood turning to ice.
Because the moment he said it, I realized that I'd known it from the beginning. What was churning my gut wasn't shock or doubt or disbelief. It was the sickening acceptance of a known horror.
All this time, of course, Janus was crooning subliminally in my ear about how I'd been made a fool of, how my reputation for integrity had been used to stifle criticism of our relationship with Kamaranga. Then he said he'd be willing to bet that somewhere there'd be a file proving the truth of what he'd just told me. Names... dates, places, everything. So then, of course, I knew exactly what he wanted me to do. I said that I couldn't believe such a file existed, that the Yanks would have had to be out of their minds to let us have it. He said that it was a precondition of our cooperation that we were kept completely in the picture both before and after the event. Then I said that even if I got him what he wanted, the press would never touch it. He laughed and said, these things could always be arranged. Then I said, and for the first time my voice sounded genuinely convincing, that if names were named, people would get hurt. He went suddenly cold and said that a lot of people had got hurt in Kamaranga. Then he saw the look on my face and changed his tune. I have no illusions about the kind of person Janus is. He said that with their cover blown, these men's potential for harm would be at an end. It would serve nobody's interest to have them killed. I don't think he particularly believed it. I don't think he particularly didn't believe it. It just didn't bother him, one way or the other. But it bothered me. That must be why I told him that what he was asking me to do was commit treason. He stood up, and his expression was a mixture of pity and contempt. He asked me who I thought I would be betraying. A bunch of hired thugs prepared to put up with any amount of torture and killing to keep Africa safe for capitalism. My so-called colleagues, who had lied to me and used me and broken up my marriage in the process. When I didn't answer, he said he had obviously been mistaken about me. He'd thought I was a genuine idealist who'd gone astray under pressure and who'd jump at the chance of undoing some of the harm I'd done by letting the ordinary, decent men and women of this country know the things their government did in their name, behind their backs. Obviously, Marianne had been right about me all along.
David Pargeter.
David, Christopher here. You asked me to ring.
Oh, yes. I asked to have the entire Kamaranga file sent over to my office.
That's right. Gave instructions half an hour ago. Don't tell me it hasn't arrived yet.
The entire Kamaranga file, Christopher.
I'm sorry, David. I certainly gave instructions that you should be sent all the relevant documents. I'm sorry if anything's been omitted.
You know Brayley's tabled another question for this afternoon, don't you? He's in a very truculent mood. I'd hate to find myself on the receiving end of any nasty surprises.
I can't imagine Brayley having any information about Kamaranga that you're not already aware of.
Yeah, well, there's only one way to be certain of that, to make sure there is no information about Kamaranga that I'm not already aware of. I want the American file, Christopher.
I'm afraid you've lost me, David.
Oh, that really isn't fair. If Oliver wants me to go on putting my head on the block, the least he can do is let me know exactly how sharp the axe is. I mean it, Christopher. I am not answering one more question about Kamaranga until I'm in full possession of the facts. Otherwise, Oliver can do his own dirty work.
Oliver's in Europe, as you very well know.
That's right. Oliver's in Europe, and I'm here with my reputation on the line, and a very clever and determined backbencher after my blood. So, if you and Oliver think I'm up to handling the situation, the least you can do to demonstrate your confidence is to put me completely in the picture.
You really think that Brayley may have got hold of something damaging?
I don't know. That's just the way it smells.
Fair enough, David. Frankly, I was in favor of taking you into our conference from the beginning, but Oliver had certain, well, reservations. However, in the light of your recent performance, I'll let you have the American file right away.
Once I received the American file, I phoned Janus from my flat.
I've got it. Do you know, I actually believed you were making it up. Even while I was bluffing it out of Christopher, I didn't believe it actually existed. I never believed they could be so treacherous. What? What do you mean you'll come here? I thought we were going to meet for lunch. No, but I thought... Are you going to take it with you? But the arrangement was that I was simply going to find out if it existed. Yes, the public have a right to know what happened, but publishing a list of agents of an allied government, I'm not really happy about that. But can't you just reproduce the relevant bits without naming any names? I don't know. You're all right. I'll see you in 10 minutes.
Funny. Until I actually talked to Janus on the phone, All I could think about was my own fury, my desire to rub all their faces in their own mess. But now, I can't help it. Words like spy and traitor keep bouncing about inside my head. Because however much Janus may talk about the people's right to know, we're both perfectly well aware that all Janus and his employers are interested in is finding a way to damage this country's image in the eyes of the rest of the world. Wonderful irony, wouldn't it be, if the first time in years I act from genuine conviction brands me as a traitor in the eyes of the people I'm trying to help? Anyway, do I still have a choice? Janus will be here within minutes. And somehow, whatever I've decided, I can't see him leaving here without that precious scrap of paper in his pocket. Perhaps I could hide it somewhere, buy myself time to think. What do I do?
What do I do?
The final existential act
that would set me irrevocably outside of the pack, or tell Janus to go to hell, wriggle back down into the safety of the pack, where it's warm and safe, just as I've been trying to do all my life. Never to have to think or ask questions again. I wish I could talk to Mary.
Back at last. I've given you up for dead.
Well, that's the most turgid couple of hours I hope I'll ever have to spend.
Do you think your Calvinist conscience could stretch to a scotch?
I'm tempted, I must admit, but the views on self-indulgence have been reinforced by my recent ordeal.
So, what do you think?
Where would you like me to start?
Give me your general views on Pargeter.
In a word, pathetic.
It's as simple as that, you think?
He's not the only man whose wife has left them.
No, but these things take people differently.
Aye, that's true enough. All right, Simon, if you want a detailed analysis, I think he's a spoiled brat who's had everything his own way since the day he was born. And one day he finds that for the first time he can't hang on to something he wants, and he goes to pieces overnight. He spends his time wallowing in manufactured guilt and genuine self-pity, and kids himself, and you too, probably, that he's looking for some kind of meaning for life when all he's doing is finding any excuse to avoid picking himself up and getting on with a job. Within 2 months, he's fallen to pieces to such an extent that he's seriously thinking of selling out his country and finding arty-farty reasons for convincing himself that it's a splendid thing to do. And if that's not pathetic, I don't know what is.
Well, I'm glad to see you're keeping well in character.
Oh, I'm nothing, if not predictable. For God's sake, Simon, all this crap about hubris. Life kicks us all in the slats from time to time. If you're any kind of a man, you go on with it without bursting into tears.
Don't you ever wonder what life's about, Mac?
That's the advantages of growing up in a Glasgow slum. You know bloody well what life's about. You pay the bills, keep your nose clean, and if you can have a bit of harmless fun occasionally, that's a bonus.
So, tell me, do you think his arty-farty reasons would have convinced Pargeter to sell out or not?
No, frankly, I don't. I think in the final analysis, he'd have funked it and still found reasons for convincing himself that he was being noble.
So what do you think would have happened when friend Janus arrived at the flat?
I don't know. I can make a few intelligent guesses.
Yes, we'll hold the guesses for a moment. We have had one piece of luck from our preliminary inquiries. A neighbour who knows Pargeter well by sight saw him hurry out of his flat and drop something in the post. He'd just have had enough time to parcel up the diary and pop it in the post and be back inside before Janus put in an appearance.
Did the neighbour catch a glimpse of Janus arriving?
Unfortunately not.
What the hell would be the point of Pargeter sending us the diary?
That's what I can't work out. All I can think of is that he thought he could hold it over Janus as a sort of lever, to keep him quiet until he made up his own mind what to do. Sort of, look here, I've told security you exist, get off my back or I'll tell them your identity into the bargain.
Yes, but man, that would only make sense if he'd sent the diary to some neutral source. See, his wife, with instructions to send it on to us if he doesn't get in touch within a certain time. By sending it to us, he's already done Janus most of the damage he can, and finished off his own precious career into the bargain.
Yeah, well, he's obviously not thinking straight.
Simon, if you don't mind me saying so, you're looking at this like one of your lovely abstract intellectual problems. What would Janus do? What would Pargeter do? Why did Pargeter send us the diary? Who cares? The point we have to hang on to
is that it's 99% certain that friend Janus has that little piece of paper.
So why hasn't he published it?
I don't know, Simon. What I do know is that Janus is one of the five or six names mentioned in that diary, and that's what we've got to concentrate on. You find Janus, and you solve all your other problems as well.
That's rather what I thought you'd say. All right, Mac, as of now, you're in charge of the Janus angle. I still rather want to stick with Pargeta for a while. Any first thoughts?
Well, I suppose even in this crazy world, we can rule out the Foreign Secretary.
I think we'd better assume that for the moment.
All right, then. Well, in spite of his coy chat about refusing to indicate the sex, I don't think it's a woman.
Neither do I. It's obviously not his wife, and there's only one other woman mentioned.
I imagine you'll be having a quiet chat with Miss Williams in the near future?
In 5 minutes, to be exact. Well, that narrows the cast list down to four. Care to pick a favourite?
Well, for different reasons, I would put either Rory Reese or Luther Bray at the head of the list. The interesting thing was, though, the Pargeter seemed surprised when Janus phoned and asked him to lunch.
Yes, except that presumably he would be rather surprised if someone he works with rang him at home to fix a lunch appointment for the next day.
What about this code name he chose? Janus. I suppose there's some classical allusion there that passes right over my head.
Janus was a Roman deity, guardian of the gateway between life and death. Best known for having two faces.
Oh, I see. Pretty obvious choice for anyone who was pretending to be something he wasn't. Well, that's not much help, then.
So, where do we start?
Well, you know me, I always favor the line of least resistance.
The hell you do. You're talking about Luther Bray, I take it?
And why not? He's a lifetime communist, even if he's never towed the party line. It's obvious from the diary that Pargeter cares a lot about his opinions, even if he didn't share his ideology.
Yes, the only thing about Bray is, as a known communist, he's been under surveillance for years. Nobody's tripped over any strings leading back to Moscow. In fact, quite the reverse. He's a very anti-Russian red.
Ah, well, that could be a pretty elaborate double bluff, if you like. Anyway, if you're giving me carte blanche, it's Comrade Bray's doorbell I'll be ringing first.
All right, Mac, on your bicycle.
It's not a rude question. How exactly are you going to tackle this thing?
Rightly or wrongly, I still think the answer lies with Pargeta himself. I'm going to start with his wife.
Oh, well, she certainly looks very attractive if the newspapers are anything to go by.
Oh, hello, Mac.
Jean.
Why is he giving me the big freeze? Why are you giving me the big freeze?
Nobody's giving you any kind of freeze. Sit down.
Simon, are you holding me responsible for this in some way?
Responsible for what?
For whatever David's done.
David?
Yes, David. That's what I called him. That's what I'd call him if he were to walk in here right now. What has he done?
We don't know exactly. But there seems to be a very real possibility that he's passed on confidential information to the enemy.
But that's...
Yes?
I was going to say that's absolutely ridiculous. But I suppose it needn't be.
Do you think it's likely?
I didn't. I still don't. Not really. It's all in the report, Simon. He was depressed, feeling sorry for himself, feeling the point had gone out of everything. But I felt that underneath it all, his ego was big enough to push him up again when he'd done enough brooding. It's in the report.
Quite.
Oh, for Christ's sake, Simon, I was simply supposed to be making an assessment of the man's ability to carry out his job. To see if he wouldn't have a crack-up at some highly embarrassing moment. Nobody said anything about selling out.
No, but I do credit my operatives with a certain flexibility.
Oh, Simon, everything Pargeta said and did that night is in the folder. If I drew the wrong conclusions from it, so did you.
Everything.
What do you mean? What's that?
Pargeta's diary. It gives a fairly lengthy description of the events of that night. Not altogether flattering. You don't seem to make any reference to having gone to bed with him.
Was it necessary?
I don't know. You tell me.
You know what I mean. I don't see that it makes any difference.
You were supposed to be making an objective assessment.
And if you go to bed with someone, you can't remain objective, is that it?
I would have thought that was fairly obvious.
Oh, how funny, Simon.
Up to now, you've given me a completely different impression. Or are you saying you find yourself unable to make an objective judgment about my capabilities?
All right, then, it's your objective opinion that Pargiter wouldn't have passed on secrets to the enemy.
I wouldn't have thought so.
Even if this piece of information was something he'd come to regard as symbolic of the rift between himself and his wife, and of the way he'd come to let himself down over the years.
I'm not a psychologist. I suppose it's possible.
Oh, damn.
Yes, Mr. Bray. That's right.
I know you, don't I?
I don't think we've met, sir, no.
But I know you. You're from a special branch.
Not special branch, no. But I am with security. My name is McLeod. May I come in for a moment?
You mean I can say no?
Now, why would you want to do that, sir?
Your friends come in and turn this place over fairly regularly, you know. But you're welcome to come in and take a look round for yourself.
Well, I can't say that anybody's too worried about your little newspaper, Mr. Bray. Although, as you say, we do run our eye over it from time to time, just as a formality. I don't think anybody regards you as a serious threat to democracy, sir.
Don't they? And what are you doing here?
Would you like to tell me where you spent lunchtime 2 days ago?
What the hell do you want to know that for?
If you could just answer the question, Mr. Bray.
All right, I'll tell you where I spent lunchtime 2 days ago. The same place I spent it yesterday and today. The same place I spend it every day, here, working.
Was anybody with you?
I wouldn't think so. No, nobody.
You live alone, do you, Mr. Bray?
I imagine some of your colleagues could tell you exactly where my wife is at the moment if you really don't know. Now, can I get on with my harmless little newspaper? Look, if you even glance through my file, you'll have noticed that in spite of all the provocation from your side of the fence, and sometimes against my better judgment, I've never advocated violence. I have never supported terrorism.
Well, have you any reason to think I'm visiting you in that sort of connection now, sir?
I haven't the vaguest bloody idea in what connection you've come to see me. I'd be fascinated to be enlightened.
I understand you're a friend of David Pargiter.
David? David?
When did you last see him?
I don't know. He came round here feeling sorry for himself, got pissed out of his mind and wandered off into the night. I haven't set eyes on him since.
And you're quite sure?
Quite sure. Well, what's happened to him?
Oh, did I say anything had happened?
Don't tell me some nuts have been threatening to blow him up. Ah, that really would restore his sense of self-importance.
Oh, you feel his sense of self-importance is in need of restoration, do you?
I don't believe it. You're never investigating David. You must be out of your mind.
You think so?
David Pargett is as likely to be a security risk as Ian Paisley is to be the next Pope. Now, you think he's flipped because Marianne left him? I don't know why I should be wasting my time trying to help somebody like you anyway.
Because things could turn out very nasty for you if you didn't.
Could they? You wouldn't by any chance be toying with the idea that I'm involved in some way with what David's done. That'd be really funny.
Poor David. He's like a child.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Pargiter, I'm not quite with you.
Spies, agents. He'd be completely out of his depth. What exactly is he supposed to have done?
I'm afraid I can't tell you that.
It's something to do with Kamaranga, isn't it?
I've already told you more than my superiors would approve of, Mrs. Pargiter. Incidentally, I'm sure I've no need to tell you how imperative it is that the press doesn't get hold of any of this.
I'm hardly likely to do anything to get David into any more trouble, am I? Or is he already dead?
No, I wouldn't imagine so for a minute. I mean, the Russians have a good reason for keeping your husband alive.
Which is?
I think they want to get as much out of this as they possibly can. Which means that apart from the information your husband can give them, they also want a propaganda victory. British minister denounces government and flees to Moscow, sort of thing.
But David would never do that.
Mrs. Pargiter, underneath his surface calm, I think your husband is in a state of intense moral confusion. I think there's no telling what he might do.
I see. So, in a way, all this is my fault.
Oh, nonsense. I'm not saying anything of the kind.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Mary?
I'm here, Rory.
Why are your suitcases in the... Oh. Hello?
Rory, this is Mr. Nash. He's from some security department or other.
DI5.
Oh, yes.
He's looking for David.
David?
Well, you won't find him here, I sincerely trust.
Apparently, he's disappeared.
You're joking.
Joking, Mr. Rhys?
What's he done? Gone into hiding with a bottle of whiskey, leaving behind a tear-stained note saying you'll all be sorry when I'm dead?
All right, Rory.
Oh, come on, Mary. Don't get sucked in. That's exactly what he wants. David's the last person on earth to top himself when it comes to the crunch.
Apparently, I know it sounds crazy, apparently David left a diary. It says that a few days ago he was approached by some sort of agent who asked him to hand over some sort of secret document.
He made it up.
What?
Where did you find this diary?
It was sent to my office by yesterday's post.
Ah, perfect. He starts keeping a diary, no doubt pouring out all his own deathless thoughts, mixed in with a few real events. And then finally he flips, decides to vanish and thinks, what fun! I'll invent a red bogeyman, send the diary to security and have them all running round chasing their tails.
Why would he want to do that?
Well, I don't know. Why do people keep shooting world figures they've never met and against whom they can't possibly have any grudge? Because the crazier it is, the more certain they can be that they alone are in charge of their actions.
If that were true, if those really were the sort of thoughts motivating Mr. Pargeter, might they not be equally powerful motives for a genuine act of betrayal?
Mr. Nash, you're not really taking this idea of Rory seriously.
Well, frankly, Mrs. Pargeter, I'm floundering.
Look, David is very clever when it comes to abstract ideas. If you present him with a new thought, well, in no time at all, he can take it, develop and enlarge it till he's gone miles ahead of you. He was a brilliant debater at university, a brilliant speaker when he went into politics. Well, that's why I admired him so much at first. He could take beliefs that would have me half coherent when I tried to defend them and express them so clearly and logically. I mean, I took it for granted that he felt these things as deeply as I did, or maybe even more deeply. That it was the strength of his feelings that made him so good at expressing them. It was only very slowly and reluctantly that I came to the conclusion that it was precisely because these were intellectual convictions instead of inescapable emotional ones that he could argue them so skillfully. Is this making sense?
Go on, please.
No, that's it, really. What I mean is, you and I, if someone very clever managed to demolish our deeply held personal convictions, it might make us angry and defensive. But deep inside, they'd still be our convictions. Our faith wouldn't be shaken. Well, David could hardly ever be beaten in an intellectual debate. But if he was, well, there was nothing for him to fall back on.
So what you're saying...
Oh. Hello, Rhys.
Is Mr. Nash with you, please?
Yes, he's here. For you.
Oh, I gave my office this number. I hope you don't mind.
Not at all.
Nash here.
Simon, it's Jean. We've been getting some tentative calls from some of the nationals. Apparently they've been receiving anonymous letters.
Oh, yes.
All they say in big purple letters is, where is David Pargeter?
Not altogether unexpected.
And the minister is very anxious to talk to you.
Is he? Well, perhaps you'd better tell him you haven't been able to reach me.
Oh, he'll love that.
I'm sure he will. Hang on a moment. Mrs. Pargeter, do you have a key to your old flat?
Yes.
Would you mind very much if I borrowed it?
I suppose not.
Jean, meet me at David Pargeter's flat in half an hour.
All right.
Sorry about that. So, correct me if I'm wrong, Mrs. Pargeter, but what you seem to be saying was that, like many clever men, your husband, if approached in the right way, was easier to manipulate than most.
Yes, I suppose so.
One other question, Mrs. Pargeter. Why are your suitcases packed?
I have to go up north for a week. My paper's sending me.
Oh, I see. But you'll be coming back here, will you?
I'm not quite sure what I'll be doing.
Nice of you to keep me au fait with your mental processes.
Oh, not now, Rory. In any case, I'm obviously not going anywhere until there's news about David. So, what exactly are we looking for?
Anything. Anything that might give us a clue. Oh,
You think he might have hidden the file somewhere in the flat, like he says in the diary?
No, I don't. If he had, friend Janus would have turned the place upside down looking for it. And not the slightest sign of a search. None of this adds up, John. I mean, if he's going to go to the trouble of sending us the diary, why not finish the damn thing off properly? Why not let us know who Janus is?
Well, perhaps he just thought the hell with it and stuck the diary in the post as it stood, almost as an afterthought.
And then did what? Jumped in the river?
Oh. You liked him, didn't you?
What?
Pardita. David. You liked him.
Yes, I did, rather. I'm not exactly sure why.
You have a lot in common.
I thought it was considered an ideal reason for disliking somebody. What do we have in common?
Vulnerability, I suppose.
You mean we're both a couple of lost little boys underneath it all? God, how you women cling to that particular fantasy.
I read the diary.
What did you make of it?
Made me sad.
For Pardita, huh?
In a way. I wish someone had felt about me the way he feels about his wife.
I must say, all it did for me is make me more glad than ever that I'm in a job which makes it advisable to avoid the tangle of human relationships.
Oh, God, how you men cling to that particular fantasy.
What?
That the job makes you what you are, instead of the truth, which is that you are in the job because of what you are. When this is over, Simon, I'm going to ask for a transfer.
Just as you please. Rory Reese suggested the whole Janus business was a figment of Pargeter's imagination.
I wonder why he wanted you to think that.
You think that makes him a red-hot favorite, do you?
Oh, I don't know, Simon. He travels abroad a lot, making those documentaries of his. Ralph Hardcastle and Tony Vetch were both checked and rechecked before they joined the service.
Those really are famous last words.
Luther Bray is so obvious. And besides, some of the things he said about Moscow would have the Monday Club cheering.
Mac thinks that could be an elaborate double bluff.
I suppose so. It's much easier for a hardliner to pretend to be a different kind of fanatic than to try and impersonate some kind of nice liberal Democrat. Psychologically, I mean.
Well, for the moment, it doesn't matter which of them is Janus. They're all under 24-hour surveillance. They can't do anything. The point is, what have they already done?
I wonder how he managed to send those letters to the press.
I wonder why he sent those letters to the press. It's all why? Why did Janus send the letters? Why haven't we heard anything about anything for nearly 48 hours? And why, oh why, did Pardita send us the bloody diary? Wait a minute. Wait a minute, Jean.
I'm not going anywhere.
Now listen. You're David Pardita. You're sitting in this flat. Janus is due in 10 minutes. You desperately want to buy time. Something, anything that'll keep Janus off your back till you can make up your own mind about how you want to act. Well, now, you stick the relevant pages of the file into an envelope. You put a second-class stamp on it, you rush downstairs and you pop it in the post. Addressed to, I don't know, your bank, a friend who won't be nosy, anyone. And that way, you've bought yourself anything up to 48 hours. Janus arrives at this flat and Pardita tells him what he's done. Now, I don't know about you, but I know what I'd do in Janus' shoes. Get Pardita out of it, either by persuasion or force, and lock him up safely. However, on the way out, I noticed Pardita's diary. I pick it up and take it with me. Once I've got him to safety, I'd take the opportunity of reading the diary while I waited for him to tell me the address to which he'd sent the file. Then I suddenly realized there's one good way to make Pardita do this.
Torture him, you mean?
No, not except as a last resort. And don't forget, they want a willing defector. Anyway, he has a much simpler method of putting the pressure on.
What?
Jean, the reason Pardita didn't name Janus when he sent us the diary is that it wasn't Pardita who sent us the damn thing.
Oh.
I'll give MacLeod a ring. The further I go with this, I think we need a plain man's point of view. Oh, Miller, it's Nash. I was phoning MacLeod. Anything to report on our four friends? Good. Tell me, has Mr. MacLeod called in yet? Well, did he have anything interesting to say? I see. Where is Mr. MacLeod at the moment? All right, thank you, Miller.
Well, what did MacLeod have to say?
Just something about me not allowing the complex beauty of the trees to obscure the simple beauty of the woods behind them.
Coming! Coming! Simon. Jean. Oh, what are you doing here? couldn't resist the chance of trying out one of my theories on you. Can we come in?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course.
Just out here. Okay, so. So what's this new theory of yours, then?
I think... Let Jean tell you. Then I can see if it still makes sense coming out of someone else's mouth.
All right.
We, Simon, thinks that Pargeter never sent us the diary. He thinks that what the neighbor saw him posting that night was the American file on Kamaranga, addressed somewhere Pargeter knew it would be safe. He thinks he was trying to buy himself time.
Well, sounds good as far as it goes. That's the facts.
Then he thinks that Janus arrived and somehow got Pargeter away and locked him up somewhere. That he's keeping him there until he tells him where he can get the file.
Ah, that's pure speculation.
Coupled with a little psychology.
Then who in the hell is supposed to have sent us that diary?
That's the point. Janus sent it to us the same way as he sent the letters to the newspapers, to burn Pargeter's boats for him. Then he says to Pargeter, look, everyone knows what you've been up to. It's too late to change your mind now. You're facing certain ruin, whatever you decide. But play along with me, give me what I want, and I'll see that you get a nice apartment just off Red Square, a nice big pension, and the devoted thanks of the Soviet government.
No, no, no. This is just woolly theorizing.
It isn't, Mac. It's the only scenario I can come up with that makes any sense of that diary landing on my desk.
Makes a kind of sense. But for one thing...
What?
Janus is hardly likely to send us the diary, is he? Knowing that by doing so, he's virtually telling us who he is.
Unless...
Unless what?
Unless he had reason to think that even knowing that he was mentioned in the diary, we still wouldn't suspect him.
But that doesn't make sense.
Oh, don't tell me we're back to the Foreign Secretary.
No, I don't think so. You know, Mike, I was struck by what you said earlier about Janus being an obvious code name for a spy. But it seemed to me to be too obvious a name for a man of Pargeter's education to use. The character of Janus is really only truly suitable as a code name for someone the exact opposite of what he's pretending to be.
Such as?
Well, let's say an agent in this country who's also an agent for another country.
You don't mind me saying so, Simon. You're in danger of theorizing yourself out of sight of your own posterior.
Perhaps you're right. We'll have to see. Mac, you don't mind if I use your bathroom, do you?
All right, Simon. The game is over.
Don't be silly, Mac. A gun might frighten an amateur like Pargeter, but I'm a pro.
And so am I.
Well, there you are. Cut your losses. A year from now, your friends will have you back home in exchange for some poor, harmless sod they've thrown inside on trumped-up currency charges.
Aye. No doubt you're right. Although I must admit, it would give me great pleasure to blow your smug head off. But I've spent my life avoiding self-indulgence.
That was another thing that set me thinking, Mac. Jean said about Luther Bray how much easier it would be for a genuine fanatic to feign another kind of fanaticism. It made me wonder if the same thing couldn't apply to various kinds of Puritanism. Hmm. Where is Pargeter?
In the bedroom, as you were on the point of finding out for yourself.
So my theorizing was right after all.
Mm-hmm. Afraid so.
I must say I was a bit bothered in case you'd locked the door.
There's no need. When he's conscious, he's bound and gagged. And the rest of the time, he's drugged. But he's all right. People like him are always all right. He's doped to the eyeballs and sleeping like the bloody baby he is. He's really incredible, you know that? He really thought the whole thing, power struggle, class struggle, the fate of all the people on Earth, existed purely for him to work his conscience out on. And then when he decided maybe he didn't want to play after all, he could toss them away like a spoiled kid with his toys. He's incredible.
David. David.
Oh. Hello. All right, Mr. Partridge, just take it easy. Everything's all right. Yes. Yes.
Perhaps I could... could I use the phone? If you don't mind, I think I'd just better call my wife. She'll be worried about me.
In The Hubris File by Rod Beecham, the cast was David Pargeter, Geoffrey Collins, Marianne Pargeter, Jean Trend, Simon Nash, David McAllister, and Ewan MacLeod, Henry Stamper. Ralph Hardcastle, Peter Tudnam, Tony Vetch, Spencer Banks, the Foreign Minister and Christopher, Michael Godley, Luther Bray, Nigel Graham, Rory Rees, Crawford Logan, and Jean Williams, Wendy Murray. The play was directed by Jerry Jones.